Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to the official Tennis.com podcast, featuring professional coach and community leader, Kamau Murray.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Tennis.com podcast. We have a very, very special guest today. We have one of the greatest to ever do it. Somebody that can put a racket down, pick it back up, come back and win a slam, and put it down again. This is Hall of Famer and comeback kid, Kim Clijsters. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks, Kamau.
So how's Jersey? You know, I know you like had to move from Belgium, where you're like a god and a queen and could probably run for president. And now you got to go to Jersey, which is like the stepson of New York. How do you like it in Jersey?
We really enjoy living here. It's obviously been an adjustment. We started talking about it a few years ago about making the move and wanted to wait for Jada to finish sixth year in grammar school and sixth grade. And so, because that's in Belgium, that's when they changed to high schools after sixth grade. So we were like, let's wait until she finishes her school. The boys were still young enough to not be too influenced by the whole kind of change and everything. And so, yeah, so then COVID hit and kind of made it all a little bit more complicated, but moved last summer, end of June, and we've been here ever since. So I've really enjoyed it. You know, we've had a lot of things to focus on with, you know, just getting two containers shipped over from Belgium and with all our stuff and trying to kind of fit it all in the home that we had here. And then just to, you know, the goal kind of is to just make the kids settle in as soon as possible, right? Like to see like the school and everything, like, are they happy there? And to make them feel comfortable. And the family's been great here to help us out with anything that we needed. But I enjoy it. I mean, I've had people from the tour who were like, so where are you living now? I'm like, in New Jersey. And they're like, New Jersey? Like, why do you want to live in New Jersey? And I'm like, no, it's actually really nice where we live. And so I do really enjoy it. And yeah, it's been an adjustment, but I finally feel like, you know, been here for a year now that we've all settled in well, and we're kind of used to the life here now.
Now, most people don't know, because, you know, your husband, Brian, is a basketball coach. So people don't know, like, how did you all decide on Jersey? Was it because he had a job there, opportunity there? Or is he from Jersey?
He is from here. So we live in Belmar, New Jersey, and we live a block from the beach. This is the street where he grew up in. So his whole family is in the area, a lot of friends here in the area. And so that side's been great. You know, his parents used to come and visit us, you know, a few months every year. They used to fly to Belgium, or when Brian was either still playing or when he was coaching in Belgium, they would, you know, come down for, you know, a few weeks here and there. But just with everything, it's been like they're getting a little bit older, and it's just becoming harder and harder to travel. And so, you know, we wanted to be here and see, you know, what this life was all about. And we've been living together for 15 years in Belgium. And yeah, it's been a nice change. And, you know, it seems like it's all like all of a sudden or something new, but I've been coming here for 15 years. I've traveled to the States so many times. So it's not like it's, you know, such a huge culture shock for me. So it's been pretty easy, I think, to adjust.
Well, it's funny because you came back and you moved to Jersey, and when people think of tennis players, they always think any tennis player in the States lives in Florida, California. They don't think Jersey, but I try to remind people, you know, James Blake is from the Northeast, Jack Sock is from Kansas City, yeah. Andy Roddick was from Nebraska, you know, Donald Young, Taylor from Chicago. There's definitely been some players that have like been able to build a career in a cold weather state.
Look, I'm from Belgium. I never moved out of Belgium until last year. So for me, being in Belgium my whole career, you know, a tennis court is the same size no matter where you play, right? So yeah. I enjoy playing in the heat. I enjoy playing indoors. I feel like it's helped me to adjust in different circumstances. So, you know, there was always little changes here and there that I had to make. Like if I had to travel from Belgium or even from here now, if I would go to Australia, or in the past when I traveled from Europe, you know, middle of winter to Australia, I would try to, you know, maybe go a week or 10 days earlier than I usually would. So just to try to get my body adjusted a little bit more. And I would try to do, you know, some workouts in a sauna, or just to get myself, like, my body used to being in that heat. So it's all, I mean, it's all the same. It's just, I don't stress about those things too much. You know, tennis court is the same size all over the world.
I agree. So you talked about your body, right? Most people don't know that you were like bred to be an athlete. I mean, your dad was an athlete, your mom was a gymnast, right? You know, those splits that you're famous for doing on the court, I mean, that was like in the blood, right? That wasn't something you practiced. It was like the balance, the change of direction, the speed. It was like, tell us about your parents.
That was definitely not something I practiced. And I do, you know, for me, you know, and my sister, having our parents was just, because they're your parents, it's normal, right? It's normal. My mom would sometimes show off in our backyard and do like a, I don't know what you call it in English, like a cartwheel without hands. And she would like be doing that when we were, you know, 8, 10, 11 years old. So I always saw her doing things like that just for the fun of it. Or when we asked her kind of to show some moves or something, it was so easy for her. We always did a lot of stretching when we were younger with her. And then my dad, being a soccer player, you know, at a high level, was, you know, maybe not so much the soccer skills, but I think in my childhood, picking up the things that I picked up just by being around him and seeing, you know, how he would recover from a surgery. You know, he would get, you know, put a stopwatch around my neck and they say, let's go. I'm going to go to the forest. I have to sprint some hills up the hill and I want you to time me every time and write it down. So little things like that, that you kind of just pick up that become, that are normal in our lifestyle, in our family. It's just something that we were brought up with, and having my dad been in a situation where, you know, he was, you know, a known athlete at home, and it just made things easier. You know, he, you know, when I became more famous and everything, you know, he was there kind of to protect it, and knew kind of the ins and outs of that whole, you know, that world, and you know, the sharks that attack all of a sudden and all that stuff. So it's been those have been huge. Yeah, bonuses, I think, for me, now that I'm older and I look back on it. And my dad passed away, you know, 12 years ago, but still, you know, those thoughts and the routines and the habits that you build as a child, they stay with you forever. And that's what we teach our kids now too. So it's great.
So you were the first Belgian player to be number one in the world. So I relate to that story, because when I think about like tennis now, you think about like the Cocos, the Sloans, the Venus, Serena, all of these people who were like, you know, really shouldn't be there, you know, and were like sort of figuring their way out, didn't come from a lot of like tennis lineage.
No.
How did that happen? Because, you know, it's easy when your parents are former tennis players, or they know, okay, look, when you're 12, you play this tournament. When you're 13, you play this tournament. Then you go Super Nationals. But how did you make it, given the fact that neither your parents played tennis, you're in a country that wasn't famous for producing tennis players, you know, how did you make it there?
So my first contact with tennis was my mom traveled to a tournament where I guess the wives got invited to go to one of the soccer games or the soccer tournaments. And so they left us with my aunt and uncle and my two cousins. And my two cousins were a little bit older than me. I think I was 4 at the time. My two cousins who were a little bit older than me were going to their local tennis club because they were having a lesson together. And I kind of stood on the side of the fence and I saw them like hitting all these balls. And I was like, kind of like, that looks like fun. So the coach at some point was like, hey, do you want to come and like hit a few balls? And I started helping to pick up the balls first. And then when they were done, I just started hitting some balls and I like loved it. And my parents came home from the trip and I was like, I want to play tennis. So it was really something that came from me. It wasn't something that was forced upon me. It wasn't, you know, my parents who saw a dream, you know, or saw a women's sport and saw it as an opportunity for, you know, for me to grow up learning. It was really something that I felt like I really enjoyed doing. And I think that's, you know, to this day, like I enjoy playing tennis. Like I like to practice, I like to hit. And like, even if girls, like there were some girls who were here from the Open, like, you know, training here. And I just wanted to like hit, like, tell me what you want me to do. Like, I'll be your hitting partner for the, for, you know, for a few hours. And I really enjoy like hitting the ball, and it's kind of like a, yeah, it's a good workout. I enjoy the focus in there, and yeah, it's so that connection, I guess, to my past has always been something that I needed to feel, like the enjoyment of that I love for the sport. You know, that's something that to this day I feel. Yeah.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
And then when you started getting good, were there academies in Belgium, or did you have to travel to like nearby countries to sort of get like that next level of training?
So I feel like the academies have really just stepped up, like they have only in the last few years that has become more and more popular. You know, we have our federation, but before I was invited to go to the federation, I think my parents just looked at some local tennis clubs. You know, I went to school normal hours, you know, whatever, 8:30 to 3:30, and then, you know, would go to the local tennis club and get either a private lesson or a group session or whatever worked. And then gradually, you know, started doing better. And then, yeah, I remember at one point, I remember even my parents got invited. They we got this invitation to go to Bolletieri to move to Florida. And they wanted to, you know, move my parents there and even my grandparents. And I was like, why? Like, and my dad, I think that my dad always had a very kind of down to earth mentality where, you know, like what are they going to teach her different than, you know, people who are committed to, you know, putting their time and their passion and their effort into teaching, you know, a young girl here. Like the court is the same, you know, the facilities are, you know, probably the weather is better. That's the biggest difference. And, you know, Yeah, and that's how I grew up. So I never doubted anything. I just went for it every time I stepped on the court. I think my mindset was just to make the best of it because I had fun and I'd love to learn. And yeah, so, and then I went to the federation when I came to a point where, you know, I was able to travel a little bit and travel with a team and under 14s and juniors and everything. I decided to go to the federation and loved it from the first second, you know, stayed in a boarding room and with, you know, still my, you know, my best friend to date was, you know, the girl who slept in the room next to me. And yeah, we were lucky enough to play some tournaments together on tour and to play some doubles together. And so
who was that?
Caroline Maas. He was, I think her highest ranking was like 150 or 160 maybe. So she, you know, we would go to the States together and we would train a little bit or to Australia and then train. And then she would go to play like some smaller tournaments while I would go to play my tournaments and then we would catch up again. So it was a really cool lifestyle for us, you know, being so young and everything. So we really, we really, really enjoyed it. There's so many people who ask me, like, don't you feel like you missed out on your childhood and you know, the going to college and the partying at school? And I was like, no, like, I don't feel like that. Like, I feel so lucky that I've been able to do what I love doing and travel the world and, yeah, seeing all these cool places.
Always say that, you know, like, when I think about tennis players, they think that we've been robbed of our childhood. Yeah. And it's not like you've been right. It's just a different childhood. It's sort of you grow up faster because you start traveling sooner. You start meeting people who speak different languages and trying different foods. So you sort of mature faster.
Yeah, and you're by yourself a lot more too, right? Like I've spent a lot of time by myself in a hotel room, and so that gives you a lot of time to think and kind of to reflect on what's going on and. You know, everything is kind of very individual, like even with working with a coach, it's very one-on-one. So there's a lot of personal communication, I think. And that's something that I've really, yeah, I think now to this day, like I feel like I take a lot out of from what I learned when I was younger, how important it is in tennis to, you know, from when I was a young girl, it's everything is how did you feel today out on court? How did that forehand feel when you hit a good one? What do you feel you did wrong when you hit it in the net this time? So everything you connect with, how did that feel? And mm-hmm. I feel like that's been something that's that is so important for tennis players is that we learn that at such a young age, and we take that on through whatever, you know, if you start businesses afterwards it's so important to kind of feel what, or learn to see or understand what feels right to you, and follow that direction.
So you won your first Grand Slam in 2007, right?
2005.
US Open was the first
one. US Open, yeah.
Talk about feeling. How did that feel?
Oh, mixed emotions. It was all good ones. So I lost my first four Grand Slam finals before I won my first one. So I lost to Jennifer Capriati at the French Open, and then I lost my next three to Justine. And so for a few years, I remember going into the press conference, and they were always asking me, do you feel like you're too nice to win? Do you feel like you're too nice to win? And do you think you're ever going to win a Grand Slam? I was like, I can only try. Like I've beat all these girls at all the other tournaments, so why wouldn't I be able to? Just like reflecting back on how I felt, the most disappointing part of that, of losing those finals, was that I never felt like I was able to play my best tennis in the finals. I was always, you know, more nervous. I felt a little more like, ooh, like this is, you know, like this is like a huge dream come true if I can win a Grand Slam, and like I'm one match away. And those emotions kind of overcame kind of my body and my thoughts and everything. So I just really felt like in 2005, all of a sudden I just felt more calm. I don't know. I think it was the experience of losing a few times, like knowing how that felt and not wanting to be in that position again, made me feel like, okay, like I feel more at ease now in this situation, and just focus on the tennis part of it. And was able to, from there onwards, like in the big matches, play some of my best tennis. So it's all a part of, I guess, maturing. You know, we've seen players do the opposite, right? Play their first Grand Slam and win, and then kind of struggle with what comes afterwards. And so, you know, I was really close in my first Grand Slam at the French Open against Capriati, and who knows what would have happened if I would have won that match, right? I don't feel that I was ready. Now I'm almost happy that it happened the way it did, because I wasn't ready for what happens when you win a Grand Slam and the lifestyle that comes with it. So it happened all very kind of organically, naturally, and I grew into the maturity on court that I needed in those big moments.
So it's funny you say, like, when you win your first Grand Slam, it's like you got to be ready for what comes after, right? Because I think, you know, when I coached Sloan and she won her first Grand Slam in 2017, I don't think either of us was, like, ready for the target that's on your back, the expectation that every time you lose, now it's like a career win for somebody else and, like, you know, global headline that you lose. What I think about the girl Emma. Emma played our 125 here in Chicago before the U.S. Open. Mm-hmm. And she lost in the finals, right, to another teenager. And then she wins. And when she won, I couldn't help but, like, feel like, uh-oh.
Yeah, I have the same feeling.
You know, it wasn't like, oh, my God, it's so great. Her life's about to change, da-da-da. It was kind of like, uh-oh.
For me, like, my mother instinct kicks in, right? Like, when I saw her and afterwards, like, I saw some people of her team, and I was like, I hope she has good people around her who keep her, you know, who keep her kind of like, who filter, you know, the toxicity that comes at you, right? And as much as possible, you can kind of, you know, you can't live in a bubble, but yeah, you just hope that, yeah, I don't know, like that it stays healthy, right? I think that's the whole point of it. Like, I think that she's still so innocent and so natural out there, and which is what I absolutely love. I don't even know how many times I've used the word, like, amazing, incredible, these last, like, few days since she's won the tournament, because it's been an incredible story. And to see her win and to see her do it with such natural flair, and the on-court interviews, the intercourts in the TV studios afterwards, like, it's just amazing to see her do that. So I hope that, yeah, it doesn't change. Because I do feel like it can change, right? Because of the things that you meet. And that's not, you know, a lot of people don't talk about that. Like, there's even people close to you will change. People, you know, will want something from you all the time. And it changes the whole dynamic of your, you know, environment. And so those are all different situations that you have to go through. And, but yeah, it's a part of growing up.
So like somebody said, somebody asked me if you had, you know, if you could like give her a piece of advice, what would you, her or her coach, right? Cause her coach was here a couple of weeks ago. And he was wearing like the hat from the Chicago tournament here. Like it's his good luck hat every time. And mine's like, remain grateful. Yeah. Like that, that would be like just the one thing I would tell her. What would you tell her, you know, finish after this win, what would you tell her as a piece of advice?
I mean, remaining grateful, I think is definitely on top of the board. I think, yeah, what is important is not get sucked into the fakeness of that kind of world. And with fakeness, I don't mean it disrespectfully, but there's all of a sudden there's so much that gets thrown at you. And it's, I get it. Like it's a lot of things are very tempting, right? The money, let me do this and let me be on the cover of that and let me meet those people. But it all drains and takes energy away from the player. So from when you get, you know, I assume her goal and any tennis player's goal is when you step out there is to be the best tennis player that you can be. And those things are all little, yeah, energy eaters, I call them. And
energy vampires.
Yeah. And you need that energy, right? For when you step out on court and maybe not in the first round, maybe not in the second round, but when you get to a quarterfinal or a semifinal and it's 4-all in the third, and it's like those moments make a big difference and that extra energy. So for me, I think it would probably be something like that, is hopefully her management, her, you know, whoever's close to her team, her parents are able to kind of create a good schedule for her so that she's, you know, able to still kind of follow up on the interest, outside interest that she has, right? That keep her happy and healthy. But at the same time, also, you know, make sure that she keeps that focus on the tennis part of it all.
So let me ask you this then, because now that you're like jumping back into it, right, and you're playing, you know, when I look at, you know, that tournament, I look at, you know, the past couple of slams. I remember 2019, I think there was like 19 different winners, the first 19 tournaments of the year. And I remember thinking like any girl could win every week. You know what I mean? So like when you look at somebody that didn't even get into a 1-25 2 weeks before the Open. Mm. Got in the, I mean, I had to give her a wild card, right? Then she played qualies at the Open, ends up winning the whole thing. Do you now, as you're stepping back into playing, do you feel like, or when you decide to come back, did you look at tennis and like, if they could win, I could win? You know, what was the thought?
Not really. It was more, for me, it was an internal kind of thought, like an internal motivation and a challenge for myself, I think, where I was like, I wonder if I can still compete. And I felt, you know, there were little triggers throughout, you know, when I hit with different players here and there, and I was like, oh, that kind of felt good. But then, you know, it's just a practice. It's not, you know, a full on tournament. And I obviously have to get fitter and I have to get stronger and I have to, you know, my reactions, my eyesight, everything, I just needs to like come back. And that's been the challenge. And that's why, like, I've loved listening and watching Andy Murray, you know, go through his, you know, his thoughts. And he's been so open and in his interviews about how he feels and what his reasoning is of playing. And it is, you know, I still love doing what I do. I feel very lucky that I've been able to, throughout my career, you know, stop when I did stop. You know, I was very early when I had Jada. I was 25, I think. But that was always a part of my, childhood dreams was to be a mom. So when that happened, I met my husband, and it was I feel very lucky that I've listened to myself and that I've followed up with, you know, how I was feeling, because I know there's a lot of girls out there who are doubting, oh, like, what am I doing? Why am I still on tour? I want to start a family, but I don't, you know, I still want to make money. I still need to, you know, keep my points up, and I can't disappoint my sponsors. So I feel very happy that I've been able to do it how I did it. That doesn't mean that it would work for other people, obviously, but for me, it was something that was important, because in those moments, I didn't feel the passion and I didn't feel like, yeah, that I could give my sport everything that I had. And so, yeah, it's been, that was important, I think, for me to follow, you know, my individual goals.
So you retire the first time. You like Michael Jordan, right? You get to come back, right? And do it all. You like, you don't realize that you're the Michael Jordan of our sport, right? You retire and come back.
A little segment.
I know, right? But you retired at 23.
Yeah, I'm so bad with like
23
years
retired.
And dates and yeah. Something around
retire,
that.
And it was like, did you look up and say, wow, I'm only 23. I hope to live till I'm 85.
No, I didn't think like that. No, that's the thing. I don't think like that. I think like, you know, I wasn't happy playing anymore. Like I wasn't happy traveling. I wasn't happy. Like I remember like playing in Warsaw one year and I don't know who I beat in the first round. I won and I'm coming off the court and I'm like, I'm not happy. I'm not happy doing this. Like I cried and my dad was there with me and he's like, what's going on? Like, why are you feeling like this? And so I just started talking to him and like, it was a lot of things. And, you know, like, I'm very happy that I was able to like verbally explain that I didn't enjoy, you know, that the lifestyle anymore, that it became too draining and that it, and, you know, also because I met Brian and I wanted, you know, he was home and I wanted to spend a little bit more time at home. And so, yeah, so that just was why I decided to quit so early, because I wasn't doing, you know, what to me was the most normal thing to do, was to be fully committed and focused on tennis. I couldn't do it anymore. And so then there was no point, because then I felt guilty on court. I felt like I wasn't, yeah, being who I, you know, the best tennis player that I wanted to be when I'm out there. And so, yeah.
So like I always, you know, talk about, you know, when I first started coaching, you know, I didn't have any kids at the time. You know what I mean? So it was easier. Right? I just got married, but you know, whatever. I'll go, you know, I was coaching somebody, I was playing qualies, whatever. I'll be gone a couple of days. If we'll lose, we'll be back home. You know what I mean? But then the better you do, like as a player, the longer you're on the road, right? So it's sort of, you know, you talked about you want to spend more time at home, but like at your level where you're like the best player in the world, you're like every slam, you're there for 2 weeks. Mm. You know what I mean? And then you're going there. Like if you get done late at, you know, French Open, you got to stay on the road and go straight to Wimbledon. You know, you don't get to go home and have like a 1 week break. And so I think that makes it hard. And I think like, you know, Brian's a basketball player. Traveling in tennis is not like traveling in the NBA.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're on and off the airplane. It's not like a team plane and a team jet. You know, you're like,
oh no,
stop over in Ireland and then got to go to Luxembourg. Yeah. It's like all these other things. It's a very different lifestyle. Yeah. And it's not that players are ungrateful, but I think it's still challenging. And I think, you know, people say, well, Kim, you're making a lot of money. You're making your own TV. You're doing this. How could you be unhappy? You know what I mean? And we hear it so often, you know, so what would, so if someone asked you, what, well, you're making a lot of money, you're top five in the world, your own TV, how could you be unhappy?
Well, yeah, I wasn't unhappy because I felt like I was not able to play the sport the way that I want to play it. And that is knowing that I need to put the time in, have my goals, have my individual goals, but then also the long-term goals. And to me, it just felt so overwhelming. And it felt so like, yeah, I've been doing this. You know, I was young. I was also very young when I, you know, when I started playing on tour. So, and again, it was, you know, the intensity for many years was very high. I feel very lucky that Brian, you know, was at an age where he quit playing basketball. We had Jada. So when I started again, you know, we were able to travel together as a family. So I didn't have to leave them behind. I think there was, you know, in those 3 years or so, there was, you know, one tournament where they didn't travel with me. And that was Doha, the championships in Doha. So I feel very lucky that they have been able to travel with me. Now things are obviously different. You know, Jada, she's 13. She's taller than me. She has her own, you know, basketball games that she plays, her school. And so they have their own schedule and everything. And so she's like, Mom, I don't even want to go with you anymore. She's like, so it's a different, she wants to be home. She wants to go and hang out with her friends and train for basketball. And that's totally fine. And so it's different. Things have shifted. The boys do. They, I remember Jack, I came home from practice one time and I'm all sweaty. And he's like, Mom, what'd you do? Like, why are you all sweaty? And I said, I went to play tennis. He's like, you play tennis? That's what he said. So I was like, yes, I do. And So yeah, just funny how things like change. And I was in New York for a few days recently for the Open, and 3 days, and my two little ones, they missed me. It looked like I was gone for a month. Like they came home and they jumped. I came home and they jumped on me and they're like, "Mom, we missed you." And so it's yeah, it just changes the dynamic in the family a little bit too. But I enjoy, you know, my goal with me playing now was never to be playing, you know, 15 tournaments a year. You know, it was to play a few tournaments here and there, get to a level where I'm capable of. I know I've never been the player who needs a lot of matches, who needs hours and hours upon the tennis court. Even now, like when I have a few days off, like I can step out there and I'm hitting the ball clean. I'm, you know, for me, it's more important for me to recover and to be healthy. I think that's my main focus now these days. So I feel like I'm hitting the ball well, the best that I've hit since I started 2 years ago, a year and a half ago. So that's been my main priority, is to make sure that for me, the balance has to be there, right? Like I'm very happy that school started again, so I can send them off to school and then I can go do practice. I can do my recovery. I can do a fitness workout. And then by the time that I have to go pick them up at school, my day is almost, you know, for my tennis is almost over. Maybe besides like a recovery, whatever, infrared sauna or a bike ride or a massage, but everything. And then in the afternoon, everything is based around the kids' schedule.
Well, my kids are going to be so disappointed because your kids are not coming to Chicago.
Well, I'm there.
Because I told, oh yeah, you're going to have to wrestle with them again.
I'll be the big
kid. They were like, are our friends from Jersey going to come? You know, the one with the mom that was crawling on the floor with us. I was like, I don't know if they're coming, but I think they're coming. And they're like, yeah, we can't wait to beat them up. It was like, I'm excited. I got to tell them.
Yeah.
You're not coming. They're not coming. You're going to have to beat up their mother.
No.
So I remember last year, you talk about like you not being a player that didn't need hours and hours on the court. I remember the first time I was on the opposite side of the court with you, I was hitting with somebody and you were literally hitting them off the court. And they were like, this old lady is hitting me off the court. I said, yeah, that old lady is hitting the best ball that I've ever seen anybody hit. I was like, that is amazing that she can like see a ball, hit the ball in the middle of the racket, and hit the ball in that spot every single time. I just remember like the purest ball striking I've ever seen. And I was like, now that's why she can come back and win a slam after not playing for 2 years. Because if she sees it, it's done. Do you still feel that?
Yeah, I mean, I still feel like I can hit the ball clean and that my timing is good. And yeah, I still, it's a natural thing and I can't describe why that is. It just falls into place. Serving sometimes is a little harder. I feel like the timing of the serve can get a little off at times.
Yeah.
But that's been improving, so I feel lucky with that too. But I feel like my ground shots, I feel like it's all pretty clean and I like to, you know, hit the targets and I like to give myself those challenges when I'm, you know, hitting the cones and all this stuff. So it's still fun.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So let me ask you this. So when you're on tour, right, everybody sort of, you know, when they first arrive on tour, somebody like just beats their ass where it was like, oh my God, like, I'm not sure if I can do this. When you arrived on tour, who was the first person that like sort of welcomed you to the tour? Like, yeah, little girl, this ain't little juniors. This is grown woman tennis.
In that sense, I was about to say, like, who was like the nicest person, one of the few people who I remember just being on tour. There was a few girls that were incredible, right? Like, because I can imagine if you all of a sudden this 15-year-old or whatever comes on and is like, hey, would you like to practice? Chanda Rubin was incredible. She was super nice. Like her and Benny, like her coach, like they were yeah, we always had really fun practices, and so super nice. Italian Silvia Farina was one of the nicest women on tour, just in the locker room talking and everything. I remember the first time Steffi Graf spoke to me. She probably doesn't remember, but the first time she talked to me was at the French Open in the Susan Lundgren locker room. And it's just those little moments for me as a teenager and stepping into that world where you feel so kind of uncomfortable and not even like you belong there. Yeah, those are the little moments that kind of over time make you feel at ease, you know. And then luckily I had some girls who were my age, Jelena Dokic, Alexandra Stevenson, you know, Dementieva, Miskina. We were all coming from juniors, and all of a sudden we're, you know, playing each other on the tour level. And it was nice to have them around too. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed, I'm trying to think, probably, I mean, one of the matches probably, and it maybe refreshed my mind because I saw some of it some highlights that they showed of Serena. I think winning her first US Open was against her first round there was against me. And so for me, I was up 5-2 in the third, and all of a sudden she's like, bang, 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 ace. You know, my arm all of a sudden, like serving for the match, my arm feels like it's like 100 kilos. I'm like, oh my God, I can't even lift my rackets. I'm so nervous. So that's where I felt like, okay, this is a different level. Like she steps it up when she feels like stepping it up. Yeah. And can do it. And that was an incredible kind of like moment where I was like, all right, this is
she's different. She's
able to step it up on a different level.
So who was the one player that always struggled? So I always say, like, you know, no matter how good you are, there's somebody, they could be ranked 50, 60, 70 spots below you. But when that draw comes out, you're like, please don't let me play this person. Who was the one person that no matter if you're number one in the world or not, that just gave you trouble?
I mean, Justine Henin was very tough for me to play against. I think also a little bit because of the history and because, you know, being a fellow like countryman and the way that she played, you know, with her slices and everything and the variety in her game, it was just was really tough to play. I'm trying to think.
She didn't give you nothing to hit. She put that ball so low, you can't knock
it. Yeah, she would chip that return, you know, I'd be like, ooh, like, where do I run to now? And that was definitely tough. But then again, like I lost her a few times and then you like a Peter and then it, you feel like a change in like confidence, right? Like, but there was definitely a few years where I felt like, ooh, like it's too consistent, the variety is too hard for me to deal with. I probably think that's her. That would be the one.
That'd be the one. So now you've played in three different eras, right? You played in the Graf time. You played when Serena and Venus were coming on to the tour. And now you're playing in this era. And to me, this era is so different because it includes social media. It includes all the press stuff. And you can see now how it's challenging for these new girls, right? Mm-hmm. Dealing with the mandatory press and the questions, right? And social media and how people can sort of get at you just with a click of a button, they can DM you and it hits your phone. And people who would never be able to touch you back in 2003, some dude in Austria now is like, all of a sudden sent you a DM and you can sort of see their reaction to it. What do you think is different from like that era to this one, just in terms of the pressure of playing?
I don't know. I really don't know. I'm sure it is different. I see a difference even with my daughter, you know, with the way that how easy it is to communicate through the phone, but not person to person. And I think that's something that is, you know, even in the last few months on tour, like a lot of kids, I didn't do my social media. I couldn't care less about my social media. Like that's just how I am because I don't find any value in that. Like I don't, a lot of people see it as a part of the brand now and I get it, right? Like it's part of who you are, but I struggle with it sometimes, to be honest with you, like seeing young girls and even with my daughter, like we really try to focus on like not worrying about that stuff and not that's not important at all in your life. So that's what we really try to focus on. I do believe that at some point it's going to change that, and that social media, the negative effects of it all, that people are, and you see it more and more, people take a breaks from it, and then they kind of go back into it because they feel like they kind of need to stay on top of things. And then they kind of feel like, well, it's all kind of fake anyway. So I don't, so I mean, that's how I feel. And, but again, yeah. I do think it's harder for a lot of girls just because you can, because there is so much more contact, right? People can just text you and, or get your information or get closer to you. And I think there's also something about the fact that, you know, you're just, let's say, in a room by yourself and you tweet or you post a photo and then you kind of put it away and think that's it, but then you don't, like, you know, the impact of something like that is so much bigger than what sometimes you may be intended to be. And so yeah, I'm not a big fan. You probably get that by now.
I'm with you. So a lot of people don't know, but you started the Kim Clijsters Academy back in your hometown, and, you know, obviously you got mine in Chicago, and it's rough, you know, trying to raise the next generation, dealing with tennis parents, trying to get them, like, you know, hey, you're going to get a lot of information from everywhere, but this is what you got to do. These are the steps you take. Why did you start that? I mean, I did it in my neighborhood just because there was a void and I was grateful for what tennis gave me. I wanted to give other people that same opportunity. But why do you have very few players start in the academy? You know, Novak has his, and but why did you start?
For me, it was mainly just to give back to the sport that I have, you know, it's given me so much. Like, I remember as a little girl growing up in a, you know, in an academy, but in a tennis club kind of atmosphere, where I would go after school, I would play tennis, and after tennis we would do fitness, and then we go play hide and seek, and we would play tag, and we would play, you know, tennis against the wall, and we would play games. So it was my whole social life of you know, hanging out there and just seeing everybody there, and you know, my parents had their social life too with the other parents, and so it was, for me, it was more to kind of create that for a younger generation, where you see a lot of kids these days, you know, without kind of hobbies and yeah, kind of hanging out in the streets or hanging out in the park. And I kind of wanted to give that opportunity to go to an environment where they can be safe, where they can be in an area where, you know, a lot of people are, you know, focused on sports, focused on tennis. They're in a healthy environment. And I think that was the main reason for me to do it, was to give back and to help girls and boys in the area who feel like, you know, they want to try and achieve the best out of themselves in tennis, and whether it is to get to, you know, the thing is, like, there's a lot of people who think, like, oh, because we're going to send them to this academy or this tennis players or Nadal's academy or Muratoglu's or Patrick's or mine or yours, or that it will just, then it will, they will become successful. And, but yeah, that's obviously not the way it works. And, and so, you know, it's probably more important to teach the parents than to be teaching the kids. But yeah, I think it's we try to, you know, for me, it's really important to have a good environment of people who work at the academy, who are passionate about the sport, who are passionate about teaching. And I've never been, you know, focused on trying to, with a local other academy or in the area, let's try and compete with them. No, like, I really believe that if you have a strong product, that you will attract the right people for it. And, you know, but it becomes a very, even in that world, I guess it's just people become very competitive and get nasty and jealous, and, you know, and it's just, yeah, stupid. Like, for you all try to help, right? You try to help the kids to become better tennis players, and they're like, no, they don't want to come practice at your academy because then maybe, you know, the parents will like it better, and let's not do that. And so I don't have time for it, and I don't, I don't know. I've seen and done too much to worry about those things.
All right. So one of my biggest disappointments in this sport is that, you know, people really don't get to know the person because only one person wins. Right. And now, you know, maybe one or two get the microphone at the end of the tournament. Right. So you have something, for example, 128 girls in a draw. Only two people get the microphone on the last day. So you never really get to know how great of a person they are, what you know, like, you know, what sort of is inside their head. So I have like some questions that are like tennis questions. So
you're gonna ask me questions?
I'm gonna ask you.
Oh, okay.
And you gotta just give me your little off the top of your head, your
answer. All right.
And I know you gotta roll. So this is like our last weapon. All right. So grass or clay?
Grass.
Montreal or Toronto?
Oof. Toronto.
Auckland or Brisbane?
Brisbane.
Court 18 or court 3?
At which Grand Slam?
Wimbledon.
Court 18.
Venus said center court. Never court 3 or never court 18.
No.
All right, Miami or Indian Wells?
Indian Wells.
Roof open or closed?
It doesn't matter. I don't care.
Hotel or Airbnb, now that you're traveling again?
Hotel now. I've done enough making my own beds and making my own breakfast. If I go to a tournament now, I want to go to a buffet and pick my breakfast.
Team dinner or eat solo?
Ooh, both. I like my solo time.
Okay. Yeah. Restaurant or room service?
Same thing, both. There's nothing greater than like laying in your bed, watching a tennis match or the night session that's going on and just being able to push the button and order, you know, a meal and kind of just relax. So I like both. I mean, there's a different time for both.
Okay. First, serve first or receive?
Serve first.
Okay. Now, you don't strike me as a superstitious person. To the right of the chair or to the left of the chair?
That I don't, but I am superstitious about other things, but not about that.
Oh, I gotta ask you that one. On the airplane, sit together or sit separate with your team?
Together.
Okay.
100%.
Best person you know that's not in the top 100 and from your era, best person from your era that was never in the top 100.
That was never in the top 100.
That's a hard one too.
Oof. I mean, I'm going to say my friend, Caroline.
I was about to say Caroline. Yeah. Heads or tails when they flip the coin?
Heads.
Heads. Grand Slam champion or world number one? Which one would you have?
I don't know. That's really hard. I was number one before I became a Grand Slam champion. So I dealt with a ton of questions about, do you think you deserve to be number one and you know, all that stuff. So I don't know.
I think today, Grand Slam champion, you get more money than world number one. If you get world number one without having to win a Grand Slam, I think you make less than if you win a Grand Slam and you're not number one.
I know, but I mean, it's about the prestige, right? Is it about the money? Like,
well, for this generation.
No, I don't. Yeah. If that's the priority, that's kind of, I mean, it's important, but it's shouldn't be the drive. I don't think, to me, becoming number one as a child, that was such an amazing achievement for me when I watched Steffi and Monica do it and I saw them compete against, you know, Arantxa Sanchez and like seeing them and then becoming number one and holding the trophy. That to me was such an incredible moment to see as a little girl. So when I became number one, and I remember to this day, like it was in LA, I beat Lindsay, and I remember the first match I played as the number one was in Canada. And when they announced me as the world number one, the connection to my childhood and seeing that. And it was such a amazing, proud moment. So they're all great achievements, you know, on their own, but yeah.
All right, last two. Wimbledon whites or colored clothes?
Let me just say, I would only wear white at Wimbledon. So I love it there, but nowhere else.
All right, this one, you probably have never experienced this because you are like the nicest person. And everyone has said that. This generation says it about you. Your generation says it about you. Proud for you or against you? Which would you prefer?
Yeah, for me.
Yeah.
Of course.
Have you ever been on the court where the crowd was against you?
Yeah, of course. Like in Fed Cups and everything, you know, everything. Like,
of course.
Or no, but I've played matches where, you know, I'm playing, you know, against an American at the States and, you know, it's not like it's extreme, but but it's fun too. You know, I remember going to my dad's soccer games and even when he was a coach, like the opposite team, like, you know, cursing him out and like, it becomes like it drives you too. You know, I'm okay with it. It doesn't bother me.
Well, thank you, Kim. I know mom duties are waiting. It's school pickup time. For me and for you, actually.
Oh, yeah? What grade are yours in now?
4, 6, and 16. So pre-K 4, first grade, okay. And then 16.
I have a pre-K 4, too, so.
Oh, no, I remember they were swimming, and they were like, get it in. They were looking forward to catching up, so we got to, like, arrange a play date.
I had the teacher come I had Blake's teacher come to me after school last year, and she's like, Blake asked me why the girls in his class don't have boobies yet. I was like, I'm sorry.
Last week we got the call. The teacher was like, KJ was kissing all the girls today. And we're like, and we asked him, KJ, were you kissing the girls? And he was like, they asked me to kiss them. So I kissed them. I was like, how many girls? He was like, 5. I was like, oh man, you can't with COVID. You can't be kissing the girls. You know, their daddy's gonna come wanna.
Yeah.
Well, they asked me to.
That's what I asked Blake. I'm like, Blake, why did you ask the teacher about the girls' boobies? Said, well, you have boobies and Jada has boobies, but the girls in my class don't have any boobies. So I said, well, they kind of start growing with as you get older. And then my other son took it to a different level. He said, well, daddy's boobies are growing too. So Brian was like, next day he went to his workout. He's like, I need to work on my chest. Like, this is so it became a very fun car ride.
That
I laughed in very hard.
I know, right? Those questions from the forum, they're so innocent, but they're so like, you start looking at your spouse and be like, who's going to answer this?
Yeah.
You know, what you got?
Brian goes like this to me every time.
I know, right?
You got it.
That's yours. Well, this has been the tennis.com podcast. I want to thank my friend, one of the nicest people to ever play this game, probably the best ball striker, past, present, and future, Hall of Famer, and person I'm looking forward to going to dinner with next week. I got the restaurants all lined up for us, Kimmy. Kim Clashes, thank you so much.
Thank you, Kamal.
For joining us on the show.
I can't wait to see you next week.
I miss you. I love you. Can't wait to see you.
Thank you.
And thank you for coming on.
All right. My pleasure. See you soon. Bye.